Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas and Go at the Y, and Gas and Go at Mill Bay.
It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have overcast skies. It is 35 degrees. Out at the airport, they have 70% humidity, southeast winds to 13, and 8 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for snow today, mainly after 1 this afternoon. High near 38, south winds to 20, gusting to 30. For tonight, rain and snow showers until 10 p.m., followed by a slight chance of rain showers, low around 29 overnight tonight with west winds 10 to 15, becoming 20 to 25 after midnight, could gust as high as 30 tonight. Coming up on the Midday Report, a report on Commissioner of Alaska Department of Fish and Game Vincent Lang's visit to Kodiak.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Louise Schiavone. Hundreds of scientists are behind a new UN report that warns the planet is staring down potential environmental catastrophe if climate goals are not met in the coming decade. NPR's Rebecca Hersher reports.
The report lays out the dire situation facing the Earth: rapidly rising seas, more intense and deadly storms, floods, droughts, and heat waves. Here's UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
The climate time bomb is ticking. But today's IPCC report is a how-to guide to defuse the climate time bomb. It is a survival guide for humanity.
The report lays out the many options for controlling global warming, including using solar, wind, and other renewable energy sources. Pivoting away from fossil fuels would save millions of lives, particularly in low-income and low-lying areas, where people are especially vulnerable to climate change. Rebecca Hersher, NPR News.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is the latest Republican to speak out against a possible indictment of former President Trump. NPR's Greg Allen has more.
Trump has said he expects to be arrested on Tuesday in a case surrounding alleged payments of hush money to adult film star Stormy Daniels. Other Republicans, including former Vice President Mike Pence, criticized the possible indictment as political. At a news conference, DeSantis, a likely Trump rival for the 2024 GOP presidential nomination, attacked Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg, saying he weaponized his office to impose a political agenda. But he didn't defend Trump.
I don't know what goes into paying hush money to a porn star to secure silence over some type of alleged affair. I can't speak to that.
DeSantis said he doesn't expect to be involved in a possible extradition of the former president, calling it a manufactured circus. Greg Allen, NPR News, Miami.
Chinese President Xi Jinping is in Moscow for a three-day state visit with Russian President Vladimir Putin, with talks expected to focus heavily on the war in Ukraine. Here in Washington, Secretary of State Antony Blinken is commenting on reports of China's proposal for a ceasefire in Ukraine.
Calling for a ceasefire that does not include the removal of Russian forces from Ukrainian territory would effectively be supporting the ratification of Russian conquest. It would recognize Russia's attempts to seize a sovereign neighbor's territory by force.
The absence of a durable solution, says Blinken, would give Russia a strategic break in action and the latitude to restart the war when Putin is ready. Another round of layoffs is in the works at Amazon. The announcement went out in a letter to employees and on the company blog. Around 9,000 jobs will be sliced from web services, advertising, and Twitch video streaming sections. This is in addition to the 18,000 Amazon job cuts announced in January. Wall Street at the close, the Dow up 382. This is NPR News in Washington.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The Commissioner of Alaska's Department of Fish and Game says preservation is the priority amidst struggling fisheries around the state. As KMXT's Brian Venois reports, the forum kicked off the second day of Confish in Kodiak on Friday.
Doug Vincent Lang is the commissioner of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. He opened his presentation sharing concerns about Chinook and chum salmon stocks across the state. Salmon populations across most areas of the state have been struggling with particular concerns for Chinook.
King salmon are pretty much depressed across our state. I think most people know that.
Some examples he provided were subsistence fishery closures in Cook Inlet last year and the Nishigaak River's Chinook struggles near Bristol Bay. Vincent Lang mentioned intercept fisheries such as Area M, where harvested fish have genetic roots from multiple areas, are starting to become more of a concern as well.
We don't always have complete consensus at the end of the decision, but at least people are coming together at a meeting and trying to find at least grudging consent to move forward on issues.
Another big topic for Vincent Lang was fishery disaster declarations. Nearly 24 disaster designations were approved by the U.S. Commerce Department last year. Vincent Lang says it's a slow process to get that funding, but he hopes to push Congress to speed up their end of the process and get relief as soon as possible.
These are long, drawn-out processes that we're trying to work with Congress to somewhat speed up so that we're not in this endless loop of waiting for money to come up.
Vincent Lang says after a tough few years for some of the state's fisheries that have experienced closures, like Bering Sea crabbers, Fish and Game is ready for when there is a surplus significant enough for harvest again. The department is working with fisherfolk on research to keep them engaged during the closures.
The important objective of that is to have a fishery at the end of it. And if all the fishermen are out of business or gone, that's not a good outcome.
He says the department is starting to see hints of growth for Bering Sea crab, but the long-term patterns for Chinook statewide are still a major concern. They're starting to do more research on the effects of hatcheries on wild stocks in the ocean. Vincent Lang also covered other topics during his presentation, including bycatch in the Bering Sea, budget increases, and border enforcement. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois.
For some reason, people who recreate in public outdoor spaces are disproportionately white. Folks in the UAF Department of Natural Resources and Environment want to know why. KUAC's Robin has this report.
Researcher Rachel Garcia says national park and other public land studies have shown that people of color don't show up in the numbers reflected in the general population.
Lots of research has looked at why disparities in land use happen, and this study is racial equity in outdoor spaces in Alaska today.
Garcia says the two groups most underrepresented are Blacks and Hispanics.
People of color, as part of this project, said things like, yeah, it's been uncomfortable for me to join the Sierra Club or particular hiking groups because I'm usually the only person of color there.
Garcia says she's looking at national organizations like Black Girls Bike or Outdoor Afro and Love is King for their environmental education programs. She's recruiting now for focus groups in Fairbanks and Anchorage who can help her frame the research. In addition to her UAF colleagues, the YWCA in Anchorage is partnering on the study, and she's organized 20 other researchers to collaborate with the focus groups and ask the questions.
Explanations and connections between why people might have both positive and negative experiences in the outdoors. What would people like to be doing more of outside? Are there specific things that prevent them from being able to do that? Are there specific things that might make it more possible to be on the land, in the outdoors, in ways that they want to be?
She says not all people who are doing things outside would call what they do recreation.
For this study, we really want to use a very expansive definition of things that you do outside. We're interested in all of them.
She says Alaska Natives make up about 20% of Alaska's population, and in some public outdoor areas, they're not participating to that degree.
One of the things that can affect land relationships is the experience of land dispossession that Indigenous people have experienced.
Garcia says she's working with Tookney Holstrom at Native Movement in Fairbanks and with Alaska Native elders to understand how to approach the topic with Alaska Native perspectives in mind.
Conversations with Tukmi led to us using the phrase ways of being on the land.
Garcia says the focus groups will meet this month and in April, and she'll record and write up the data. Information about the study is posted on the Anchorage YWCA and the UAF Department of Natural Resources and Environment websites.
My role, I think, is to present this data to organizations who could make decisions to create programs that support people being able to do more of the things that they want to do on the land.
Garcia says Alaska Native organizations, federal, state, and borough land and parks managers could use the findings of the research. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Buddy Streeper successfully defended his title in the Open North American Sled Dog Championship in Fairbanks over the weekend. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, it was Streeper's ninth ONAC victory, making him the second winningest musher in the history of the race, which started back in 1946.
The Open North American consists of 3 days of racing, 20-mile runs Friday and Saturday, followed by a 28-miler on Sunday, with the fastest total time determining the winner. After day one, Annie Mallow of Quebec had a 19-second lead over British Columbia's Buddy Streeper, but Streeper roared back Saturday, opening a 1-minute, 44-second gap on Mallow heading into Sunday's finale, in which, as the leader, Streeper started last.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go!
Streeper says he used information fed to him along the trail about the other mushers to maintain a lead.
Old school. Friends on the trail with stopwatches in strategically placed locations between the checkpoints. So I'm getting updates every 4 to 6 minutes exactly how things are going.
Information he used to meter his dog's speed, which he says they had more than enough of.
There was a lot of gas in that tank, in that team today. Like, literally, it almost felt like I had like a nitrous oxide, just that engine just, but I just kind of cruised around there at about 1500 RPM, and it was a nice run, a good team.
The ONAC win is Streeper's ninth, putting him ahead of George Atlas 8 and just 3 short of Egil Ellis's record 12. As for Mallow, she held on to second place and says she's happy with her team's performance.
A super steady run. We went through almost the same speed all the way through, and everybody was they were working as a team, you know. So I was really pleased, just having fun.
Mallow, who came within a second of beating Streeper in 2021, says she's continuing to learn and will be back to try again next year. Jake Robinson of Minnesota repeated his 2022 third-place finish, and 13 other teams completed the race. The next stop on the sprint mushing circuit is this coming weekend's Toke Race of Champions, where Streeper again hopes to defend his title. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Kenai River Sport Fishing Association founder Bob Penny died last week in his winter home in Indian Wells, California. He was 90. Penny was a powerhouse in the worlds of fishing and state politics, and his unrelenting advocacy for Kenai River king salmon often put him at the center of the so-called Cook Inlet fish wars. KDLL Sabine Pooks has this remembrance.
Penny moved to Alaska in its early years as a state to manage a lumber yard in Anchorage.
I mean, he loved the state. He moved here, like I said, in 51 and didn't have a dime.
Henry Penny says his dad was always a big fisherman. But it wasn't until 1976 when he had his first big close encounter with the Kenai River King. The two were together, and Henry caught a 60-pound fish.
When we got it up next to the boat, the look on my father's face, his eyes were as big as dinner plates.
Henry says that was the beginning of a long passion for king salmon preservation.
That definitely, if you'll pardon the pun, set the hook, and he has been addicted to that river ever since. And that's why he fought so hard to try and save the habitat.
In the 1980s, Bob Penny founded the Kenai River Sport Fishing Association, or CRISA, a sport fishing advocacy group based in Soldotna with a mission to conserve Kenai River kings. He also served a term on the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, which oversees fishing in Alaska's federal waters. Penny spent winters in California and summers in Soldotna, where he had a home on the river. Here he is in a 2021 tribute video posted by CRISA.
My heart and soul is on this river, and
I think it always will be.
King salmon like the one the Pennies caught 50 years ago are much more rare today. But Penny's longtime friend Eldon Mulder says his advocacy for Kenai River salmon continued through his life.
As he always told me, I just want to make sure, Eldon, that my kids and my grandkids have the same opportunities that that you and I do.
And he said he walked the walk. On his own property, Penny was an early installer of light-penetrating boardwalks to allow vegetation to grow underneath, and installed walkways down to the river to limit bank erosion. Penny's fight to preserve kings put him in direct conflict with Cook Inlet commercial fishermen, particularly East Side set netters who fish for sockeye, but who Penny's had caught too many kings in their nets close to shore. He tried to get set netting banned in urban areas in a 2016 ballot initiative, which the Alaska Supreme Court later ruled unconstitutional. As king salmon counts have continued to decline, set netters have faced more and more limitations on their fishery each year. Although he didn't have his own ambitions for political office, Penny was a political powerhouse, a good friend to Senators Ted Stevens and Lisa Murkowski, and a big backer to candidates like Governor Mike Dunleavy, who he helped elect with large donations in 2018 and again last year. Penny's friend Tim Navar of Kenai says there was more to the fisherman than his sport fish advocacy and his politics. He contributed to local Kenai Peninsula nonprofits like the Challenger Learning Center and the Kenai Peninsula Foundation.
People would just have to come up and say, Bob, can I get a little help? And a lot of times, like I said, he'd come up with initiatives himself to help nonprofits here on the peninsula raise additional funds for themselves with his help.
Penny also owned Penco Properties, a real estate brokerage company based in Anchorage, and he helped found the Alaska Resource Development Council. Eldon Mulder says Penny was a force of nature. The two met when Mulder was working in the legislature, and Penny was raising money for Anchorage's bid to host the Winter Olympics.
If he sensed that there was a gap or a hole that needed to be addressed, he jumped right in with both hands and both feet, and he'd work to make sure that that deficiency was addressed.
He says they traveled the world together. Even in his old age, Penny was insistent on keeping up.
And the only thing that made him mad is if you offered to carry his bag. He refused to allow anybody to help him.
Penny leaves behind 4 children, 10 grandchildren, and 7 great-grandchildren, according to a statement from his family. Henry Penny says the family plans to do a local celebration of life in the summer. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
The world's wildest, weirdest boat race is back for another year this summer. KRBD's Eric Stone spoke with one of the Race to Alaska organizers about what to expect.
The Race to Alaska is an unpowered, unsupported race from Port Townsend, Washington to Ketchikan. It takes place every summer, barring global pandemics or dinosaur-extinguishing comets, to paraphrase the race's website. Jesse Weigel is the Race to Alaska's race boss.
It's an engineless, on-the-water race, very unique in its way because it pits everybody against each other. We have kayaks versus custom-built $100,000 trimarans. And they're all going the same direction, trying to get the same place.
The race starts with the Proving Ground, as participants attempt a 25-mile crossing of the Strait of Juan de Fuca on their way to Victoria, British Columbia.
It is truly a proving ground, because on day one you have to do just about as difficult a crossing as you're going to have to do anywhere along the whole race route. In fact, last year it was extra intense, I'll say. We had a couple of capsizes, a couple of rescues. A lot of the human-powered folks wandered on down the way and found themselves posted up at a lighthouse where the lighthouse keepers took them in and fed them dinner in exchange for a little gardening work.
From there, racers have a choice. They can take the traditional inside passage route east of Vancouver Island or roll the dice on the open ocean off the west coast. That's a new option added last year. And while last year's top 2 finishers chose the outside route, Weigel says it's a big gamble.
You might be heading out into a doldrum where there's no wind and you're going to be stuck out there for 4 days while the first finishers make it into Ketchikan and are having a burger somewhere. Last year, there was a huge log jam on the inside passage, and so the fast boats that decided to go on the inside, the real contenders for first place, they got knocked out in the first couple of days by logs in the middle of the night. So this year, there's still a real puzzle as to which route could take it.
After Victoria, there's just one waypoint in Bella Bella, BC. But no matter what they choose, racers are in for some exceptional scenery.
This stretch of water is incredible. From here down to Port Townsend, it is true wilderness, you know. And so leaving Victoria, you're just right in the midst of thousands of islands and waterways with currents and whirlpools and incredible views.
Fans all over the world can follow the Racers online at the event's website, r2ak.com. Weagle says they'll post updates, photos, and video from the team throughout the race. And anyone in Ketchikan following along is welcome to greet the finishers in Thomas Basin on a dock behind the Alaska Fish House.
This race is for everybody. It's not just for the people on the water.
The free-for-all format means there are a wide variety of entrants, from catamarans to kayaks, but the race's winners so far have all been sailboats. First place gets $10,000. Second place, a set of steak knives. Third place gets absolutely nothing. Maybe a beer and a solid pat on the back. But new this year is an award just for the paddlers, the Blister Prize, courtesy of Team Oracle.
The first human-powered team to reach Ketchikan gets $1,000. Of course, that's $1,000 Canadian, because Team Oracle is Canadian, so I think that's currently somewhere around $700 American. I believe in a bag of Canadian $1 coins.
Applications for racers are open through April 15th, and the Race to Alaska's starting guns go off on June 5th. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
Does the banking crisis mean no more interest rate hikes? I'm Nova Safa with a Marketplace Minute. Analysts are split on that question. Trading of certain contracts based on the Federal Reserve's benchmark rate shows a 65% probability of a quarter-point hike after Fed policymakers conclude meetings on Wednesday. The other 35% expect no interest rate hike. The thinking goes that raising interest rates even higher now could further destabilize struggling banks. Some analysts say it's likely banks will now tighten access to credit on their own, which would slow the economy without further Fed action. Meanwhile, regulators have decided to break up the bank that started the crisis, Silicon Valley Bank. Regulators are accepting separate bids for the bank's private banking unit and its main retail operations. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, providing commercial real estate leasing and management. See a brighter way.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 20th day of March, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 8:11. It will set again at 8:23. That will give us 12 hours and 13 minutes of daylight, a gain of 5 minutes and 1 second compared to yesterday. A record high for this date was 49 degrees set in 1984 and in 2005, and our record low was 5 degrees set in 1973 and in 1991. Currently 35 degrees outside, overcast skies. It was snowing a bit ago. It looks like it still is a bit. Out at the airport, they are showing southeast winds to 13 miles per hour, 70% humidity, and 8 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for snow for the rest of the afternoon, turning to rain and snow showers tonight. High near 38 today, with a southerly wind to 20, gusting to 30. And look for a low around 29 tonight, with a west wind to 10 to 15, becoming 20 to 25 after midnight, gusting again to about 30. For tomorrow, isolated snow showers between 2 p.m. and 5 p.m., then a chance of snow after that. Increasing clouds with a high near 39, west winds 10 to 15, turning to the southeast in the afternoon. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up at 1:51 this afternoon here on the east side. That will be a 9.5-foot tide, followed by a minus tide. Our next low tide will be at 8:16 p.m. and be minus 1.3 feet. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 2:29 this afternoon and be 15.3 feet in Larson Bay, followed by a low tide at 8:54, about 9 p.m., of minus 2.2 feet. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 miles offshore. Small craft advisory through tonight. For today, south 20 becoming 30 knots in the afternoon, seas to 8 feet. For tonight, southwest 30, 3 seas to 9 feet. And for tomorrow, west 20, seas to 7 feet on our east side. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through tonight, south winds to 25 knots today and seas to 9 feet. West winds to 25 knots tonight, seas to 5 feet. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, west 15, becoming variable 10, seas 4 feet, subsiding to 2 feet in the afternoon. But on Tuesday night, they are calling for northeast winds to 30 knots and seas to 10 feet in the Shelikof. I do have one personal message. There is a lost dog out there, lost in the area of Sheraton Road and Carolyn, a small orange and white female papillon named Molly. She only weighs about 12 to 13 pounds. Please call 907-512-5674 if you have seen her or have found her. Notice is hereby given. There will be a Board of Education regular meeting tonight at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room, which is number F-140 in the old high school wing. Meeting agenda and packet can be viewed on the Kodiak Island Borough School District website. Look on the Board Docs folder. For more information, contact the Secretary to the Board of Education at 907-486-7566. Tomorrow, the Kodiak City Council will be holding a work session. This work session will begin at 3 p.m. and be held in the Kodiak Public Library. It's open to the public, and it will also be web-streamed. That link, as well as meeting packets, are available online at the City of Kodiak website. If you need more information, contact the City Clerk at 907-486-8636. And on Thursday, the Kodiak City Council will be having another work session beginning at 6:30 p.m., followed by the regular meeting at about 7:30 p.m. Both of those meetings will be held in the public library, and both are open to the public. The work session will be web-streamed, and that link can be found on the City of Kodiak website. The regular meeting itself will be broadcast on KMXT and 100.1 FM, and it will also be open to the public as well as being web-streamed. Contact the City Clerk at 907-486-8636 for more information. Join the Choose Respect March. It begins Wednesday at 12 p.m. at the Shunack Tribal Hall. Join the Choose Respect initiative to encourage the formation of healthy, respectful relationships and promote a culture of no tolerance for domestic and sexual violence. Help share the message of hope and healing. March with them and receive a free hoodie while supplies last. Choose Respect. The march begins and ends at the Shunack Tribal Hall and again is Wednesday, starting at 12 p.m. For more information, call 907-486-6171. The Kodiak Island Borough Assembly and the School Board and the School District Board will be having a joint work session. That's happening on Thursday at 6:30 p.m. in the School District Conference Room. Agenda items include the FY 2024 budget presentation and discussion. And the Board of Education, Kodiak Arts Council's Arts and Adventure Auction is coming up. That's happening Saturday, April 1st, 6 p.m. in the Fogneck Center on Near Island. The Arts Council has live and silent auctions with more than 100 items, fabulous art with every budget, travel adventures, fishing charters, local seafood, jewelry, and health and beauty packages, services to local businesses, and more. Doors to the auction open at 6. The live auction itself starts at 7, and all proceeds go to support the Arts Council's mission. Again, that's April 1st, Saturday, starts at 6 at the Fogneck Center on Near Island. The Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak is hosting yoga for grieving bodies. Sometimes there are no words that touch the complexity and depth of what we are feeling. This one-day workshop uses gentle stretches and a focus on breathing to create a bridge between what is felt inside and what is happening outside. That's happening Sunday, April 2nd from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the 100th Monkey Yoga Studio. To register, go to www.hpck.org or call them on the phone at 907-512-0600. And the AARP tax assistance goes on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Tomorrow it'll be 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Kodiak Job Center.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.